Tonight on Arena, Jerry Fish performs live in studio as he remembers American singer-songwriter Daniel Johnson and Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones on their roles in The Brutalist. +51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Irish showman and musician Jerry Fish's latest album is a heartfelt tribute to the late songwriter Daniel Johnson. The album, called Dreaming of Daniel, is a collection of Johnson's own songs reimagined with a 14-piece orchestra and contributions from artists including Mekay. The project, 5 years in the making, and I'd say even more in gestation, but I'll get that from Jerry when he speaks with us, is more than just an album. It really is a labour of love that reflects Jerry Fish's deep admiration for Johnson, a lo-fi icon whose raw, unfiltered music has inspired generations. What Jerry and Kane Boylan, who's with us in the studio, have done with these songs is quite incredible. Now, we have the keyboard rather than the 14-piece orchestra with us this evening, but you still get a sense of the wonderful arrangements that Kane has done. The Sun Shines Down on Me is the first one you're going to do for us,
it
Jerry?
Is, yes.
Now, here we go. Sun Shines Down on Me from Jerry Fish.
I'm getting closer to the facts. I've turned my back on silly dreams, and I'm walking down that lonely road. And my heavy load, I didn't bother to bring it. And the sun shines down on me, and I feel like I deserve it. The sun shines down. I'm hiding out where you can't see, behind the wall, at the back of the room. I'm crawling slowly through the dark, and feeling for a punchline. The sun shines down on me, and I want to feel like I deserve it. The sun shines down. Walking down that empty road, but an empty now, because I'm on it. And I'm getting closer to hope that I can carry and take home with me. The sun shines down on me, and I feel like I have to earn it. And the sun shines down.
The Sun Shines Down on Me from Jerry Fish, accompanied there by Cian Boylan on keyboard. Doing a very good job at doing a 10-piece orchestra with his 10 fingers, it has to be said, in that keyboard arrangement of the Daniel Johnson song Sun Shines Down to Me, one of the tracks on Jerry's album Dreaming of Daniel. I was listening to the album today and listening to Daniel Johnson as well, and every time I listen to the songs, something new in the lyrics, because they're deceptively simple, Jerry. I mean, he's talking there about, you know, I'm on the road now, my heavy load, I didn't bother to bring it today. And
yeah,
we actually start to think about what's he saying is there in that beautiful melody. And at another point, he talks about giving up on silly dreams, I think, at one point in the track as well.
I mean, the basic premise of Daniel is he suffered a lot of mental health issues, so, and speaks very directly and poetically about dealing with those things. And I think he relates to kind of basically the fragility of humanity. Mm. And I think that's the discussion, and that's the great thing that Daniel brings to the table, is this kind of value of actually neural diversity, you know, of us being, we're all very different and we all suffer with pain. I mean, I don't think there would be any art without that those feelings, depression, all sorts of things like that, you know.
And how accidental a discovery was he in many ways, not just for you, but, you know, in general terms. Because he had a difficult life, and he certainly had difficult. He struggled with his mental health throughout his life, but yet these songs were being written in the background, very lo-fi songs recorded on cassette tapes.
Yeah,
even
incredible.
When he was working in McDonald's and places like that.
Yeah, I mean the thing that there's a great documentary called The Devil and Daniel Johnson, and that really is a great one to watch if you want to discover who. A bit of his story, really.
Yeah.
I think he became even more famous after that. But Daniel basically, yeah, started just, as he said, the first album, Hi, How Are You, was recorded while he was having a nervous breakdown. But I think he was always having a nervous breakdown, you know. And he recorded them straight onto cassette and would give these cassettes out in McDonald's, you know, one would end up in your Happy Meal. And when people kind of started saying, well, I really love this, and he'd go back and re-record the whole, multi-track the whole thing. He wasn't even aware of how to duplicate a cassette. So there's some masterpieces out there on cassette. So, and then someone showed him how to duplicate. So, I mean, it really was a true artist. And I think the other thing is he got through, I think art got him through the day, do you know? Whether it was drawing or...
Well, let's actually listen to a little bit of Daniel Johnson himself, because you talk about this idea that art got him through the day. The first track on the album, on your album, which stopped me and had to play it about 3 or 4 times.
Thank you.
To go through the lyrics of it and to really listen to it, was this the story of an artist. I thought anybody who has attempted anything...
Exactly.
In the world of the arts.
Exactly.
Will know what this is about. Now, I can't play all of it, but listen to there's a kind of a naivety about it. And we were talking about this before we came to her. I don't mean that pejoratively, but there's a kind of a childlike innocence in some ways in the way he expresses himself musically. But when you listen to the lyrics, you realise there's a lot more going on than that. So this is Daniel Johnson and a little section of the song Story of an Artist.
And I'll tell a story about an artist growing old. Some would try for fame and glory, others aren't so bold. Everyone and friends and family saying, hey, get a job. Why do you only do that only? Why are you so odd? We don't really like what you do. we don't think anyone ever will. It's a problem that you have, and this problem's made you ill.
Opening section there of Story of an Artist from Daniel Johnson. Gerry Fish is with me in studio this evening. Gerry has this album, Dreaming of Daniel. You're going to be touring, you're going to be performing the songs from it in the coming weeks, and part of the reason that you're in speaking to us about it this evening. But you listen, those are just the first two verses of that song.
This is
every single line, you know.
This is the song really that hooked me. I went to see Daniel and the performance is The Story of an Artist. My wife said, you have to cover that, you know, you have to. And I've been performing it with Kean for the last over a decade. So I think that was the song that really brought me in. As you say, it's all of it. Anybody who's endeavoured to make a living, especially from being creative, has encountered everybody basically telling you not to do it. And so it's just fantastic. So that really was the hook. And then, Daniel passed away in 2019, and his manager, Tom Gimble, we released True Love Will Find You in the End, and his manager asked us, would we put on Hi, How Are You Day, which is today, actually, Daniel's birthday.
Explain Hi, How Are You Day, which is it's just such a wonderful title.
So, Daniel passed away it must be noted, Daniel has been covered and is an artist, Lana Del Rey, Tom Waits, Beck, Flaming Lips, everybody has kind of played a Daniel Johnson song. So Hi, How Are You Day is basically a celebration of Daniel, but they've put together, since he died in 2019, there's the Hi, How Are You Project. It's an educational charity that kind of, you know, goes into school and talks to kids about their mental, you know, looking after their mental health and talking about things, you know. So it's really about opening up new conversations. So every penny that comes from Daniel goes into this great legacy that he's put together. So, you know, Thomas, and I'm very lucky that I'm close to the family. They've heard this record, and I was quite surprised to hear that a good friend of Daniel's, Don Goad, said, you know, Daniel would have loved these songs because he didn't want to just record them on cassette. That was just all he had, you know.
That's what I love about the album, that it does. And
thank you
mentioned Kean, who's sitting quietly there at the keyboards behind us. I mean, Kean did the arrangements. There's a huge band in there. May Kay does several duets with you across several of the songs.
Yeah, May Kay was a big collaborator on the record. And I think, you know, we're two punk rockers, you know, I think there is a punk element to the whole Daniel Johnson thing. But I think once you start delving into Daniel and when you're trying to interpret him, you start hearing melodies and things going off in his head. And that is very interesting.
Yeah, because as we were listening to that version of The Story of an Artist, you can hear the kind of, like, there are times if he was in a studio, he'd say, oh, I'll retake that or whatever, you know, but he just kind of just runs with the mistakes, and the mistakes become part of the expression.
I mean, we know he was a massive Beatles fan, so, Sgt. Pepper's was his favourite album. You know he would have gone elsewhere, and he is going somewhere in his imagination.
And we heard it, and we'll hear it in the second song. In fact, let's listen to something from the album which will show it even better, because often when you hear Daniel Johnson doing it, it's just a guitar or it's just a piano, so it's a very simple kind of accompaniment to it.
Yeah.
But as Kean and yourselves have done with this album, you are exploring those very complex harmonic structures that are in there. It's not just a three-chord trick that
we're also having fun.
Yeah,
you know, we're having a lot of fun because they're great lyrics, and they're just, you know, the fabulous.
Yeah, there's a bit of fun certainly in the track that I'm about to play now. Ain't No Woman Gonna Make a George Jones out of Me. Let's listen. This is Gerry. This is from the album, and May Kay duetting with you.
Woo. Mm-hmm.
Ain't no woman gonna make a George Jones out of me.
Nuh-uh.
Ain't no woman gonna make a George Jones out of me.
No way.
Whatever
be, will be. Just wait and you'll see, you'll see. He know I'm gonna make a George Jones out of me.
Love is priceless, it's a feeling. Love is ruthless with no ceiling. Love is this, love is that. Boys are dogs, girls are cats.
The night is dark, I heard a bark. So I turn out the lights, close the door, lay my head on a pillow. Oh, oh mama, got really sad blues.
Really, really, really sad blues.
I say,
ain't no woman going to make a George Jones out of me. One of that's the entire track, in fact, from Dreaming of Daniel, the album that Jerry Fish is talking to us about this evening, and May Kay duetting with you on that, as she does on several of the tracks.
Yeah, May Kay is a major feature on the album, and it's a collaboration. She's been there from the beginning with the Hi, How Are You, Dave. She's a dear friend, and like I say, we're two punk rockers. She kind of gets that, you know.
I'm guessing, I mean, I'm not quite sure what the George Jones, big country star, and that's, you get that country feel at the beginning and then it goes all bluesy at the end.
I haven't deciphered all of his lyrics. I mean, a lot of people have asked me, who's George Jones, you know? But, you know, there's so much fun to play and record. We recorded them live with the band, and this is actually the first record I've ever made that I've done that on, you know. I think that's very old school.
Yeah.
And you can hear it. It's kind of a, like, I think the whole album just really feels like a show. But
that in mind? Because you have that in it. I've said this to you before. You have an innate theatricality in the way you perform music anyway. And you're often, when you perform, there's that sense of this is part of a story that you're telling across the album or across whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's... I do, I mean, both Key and I are quite cinematic with music, so I do kind of visualise a lot of music I make. And with this record, I'm a big fan of the Tarantino soundtracks or movie soundtracks where you haven't just got the same genre and style all the way through. So this record kind of followed that. So bringing May Kay on board and a female vocal, you know, in the opposite to me, it just makes a more rounded and a more beautiful listening experience.
And you just had real fun with the blues back and forth.
We did have. Well, I mean, we didn't make. We just made it up on the spot.
Yeah,
you know.
You couldn't. Well, I suppose
you couldn't rehearse that.
But you know, you let it happen, and you had the courage then to say, "That has happened. Let us leave it as it is."
Yeah.
I need to ask you about the artwork on. You brought me in a lovely vinyl version of the album. The artwork on the album itself.
That's a gentleman called Ricardo Cavallo from Barcelona. Now, Ricardo has made a graphic novel of Daniel's life as well. So,
did I make this up in my head? Did Daniel Johnson have a visual side to his artistic expression?
Massively,
well?
Yeah. Again, he's got all these characters, and he kind of also had this other kind of world that was going on, this fight between good and evil, and I guess it was kind of what was happening in his soul and in his mind, and it's an incredible experience getting this close to Daniel and interpreting him, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll never get to the bottom of it, that's for sure.
Well, the album has certainly sent you not on a downward trajectory, but you're digging deep through this album. Now you're going to be. You're performing, I'm just trying to get to my last page where that date is. You're performing, is it in the, where are you, is it the Grand Social?
On the Grand Social, we're doing Hi Ho Are You Day. We're going to have Junior Brother, Mundy, Animal Drive, A&R, John Bourne, the gang of us, May Kay will be there. Mm. We'll perform songs from the album. And basically...
And will you have the big 14-piece or something close
to it?
We
won't have the 14-piece orchestra at the Grand Social, but we have some great musicians. Mm. And it's like a Daniel Johnson fan club. So anybody, you know, all the audience are Daniel Johnson fans. It's a gig you really don't want to forget any of the lyrics in. You know, it's such fun and spontaneous. I mean, we've been doing it for since 2020 now. So C-Matt played our second gig there. Junior Brother was one of the first guests. So Junior is back. We've had Jack Ale. We've had lots of people just come in.
Daniel Johnson fan club. Family.
It's basically a Daniel Johnson fan club night. And proceeds go to the Hi Ho Are You Foundation and the Irish Youth there. So it's really about opening new conversations around mental health.
Yeah, and that great line in that early song of the first song that we heard, the story of an artist saying, you know, you're odd, and that's what's making you sick.
Yeah,
you want to let people
you ill.
Being odd or being different is perfectly fine. It's not your problem. No, it's somebody else's problem.
It's a human experience. Yeah. And like I said, I don't think we would have any art if we didn't have those feelings.
You also have a series of live dates coming up. You're in the Crescent Concert Hall in Drogheda. Hi, how are you, Dave? See it there now. Sunday the 26th in the Grand Social. Dolans in Limerick, Riverbank Arts Centre in Newbridge, Deer's Head in Belfast, the Dock Arts Centre in Carrick and Shannon, St. Luke's in Cork, Roisin, Dove and Galway. Mixture of Daniel stuff on your own on that tour, Jerry?
Yes, it'd be kind of we do a lot from the album, but then I kind of do
some of your own stuff too. Well, people can find out the exact details and times and all of that on jerry-fish.com. You're going to perform a second song live for us with Cian. What are we getting?
I suppose Daniel's most well-known song, and it's called True Love Will Find You in the End.
If you're one of the lucky ones, it certainly will.
True love will find you in the end. You'll find out just who's your friend. Don't be sad, I know you will. But don't give up until true love will find you in the end. This is a promise with a catch. Only if you're looking can it find you. True love is searching too, but how can it recognize you unless you step out into the light, the light? Don't be sad, I know you will, but don't give up until true love will find you in the end.
Don't be sad, I know you will. But don't give up until true love will find you in the end.
Jerry Fish and Kane Boylan accompanying on keyboards there with the Daniel Johnson song True Love Will Find You in the End. The big date that we want to get out there, I suppose, is the How High Are You Day celebration at the Grand Social in Dublin. That's this coming Sunday, the 26th of January. Several other dates that I mentioned there, and you can find out full details of them on jerry-fish.com. And on the text, I was lucky enough to hear Jerry play at the Arras in the presence of President Higgins. I think I was there that day myself, in fact, as well, Jerry, and Sabina, and guest, and to see them bopping and singing to this. So there you go. People having good memories. Best of luck with all of the tour. Thanks so much for coming in and performing live for us, both of you this evening, Jerry Fish and Kane Boylan. The Brutalist is the new film from Brady Corbet. It stars Adrian Brody as a fictional Hungarian post-war architect, Laszlo Toth, who escapes the horrors of the concentration camps in Europe and tries to make his way in the United States. Arrives there with no idea of what has happened to his wife, Ezerbet, played by Felicity Jones. Laszlo, that's the Adrian Brody character. His artistry and talent are recognised with the patronage of and a landmark commission from Guy Pearce's character, a wealthy industrialist called Harrison Van Buren. Much has been made of the film's duration, 3.5 hours with an intermission, and indeed the fact that it is the first film of this modern era to be filmed on VistaVision, a format not used since the 1960s. Adrian Brody has already won the Best Actor Golden Globe, and much is anticipated for the film in tomorrow's Oscar nominations. Sinead Egan spoke to Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones about their work on the film. Before we bring you that conversation, let's have a listen to get a flavour of the film itself.
There was a war on, and yet many of the sites of my projects had survived. My buildings were devised to endure such erosion of shoreline.
Guy Pearce, Felicity Jones, welcome to Arena. Guy, there's real complexity in your character, Van Buren. He's smart, he's charismatic, he's got exquisite taste. But the very first aspect of his personality that we see is rage. How compelling was it for you to play such an unpredictable character?
Really compelling, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, knowing that I'm not a particularly unpredictable actor, it's great to find roles that are unpredictable. So, you know, that's what was beautiful about the way he was presented on the page is, as you say, the first time we see him, he's flying into a rage. And then, of course, the next time we see him, basically, I'm completely enamored by Adrian's character. And once I've realized who he is, and almost like a fan, you know. So I think that unpredictability gets our audience slightly off kilter with him, which is a good thing. So it was a wonderful character to play.
These are yours, yes?
Yes.
All of them?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I upset you.
Did not realize these images were still available, much less of any consequence. May I keep these?
Of course you may. They're very artistic.
Guy, the film really makes us think about the question of artistic patronage and the power exchange in that relationship. How uneasy is that dynamic between Van Buren and Laszlo Toth? Because for all their differences, there are some similarities between these two men.
Well, they might be similar, I suppose, but I really saw the differences between them. I mean, you know, there's Laszlo Toth, who has this great skill and artistry, and there's Van Buren, who can recognise it but doesn't have it in himself. And also the quality that I think was apparent to me is that Laszlo has much more of a sense of self. he's much more confident in himself than Van Buren is. And so he's also envious about that. And I think on many levels, Van Buren doesn't know what to do with Laszlo. He admires him. He wants to own him. He wants to put him in a box. He wants to kind of get rid of, you know, he doesn't know really how to manage this person, but he's just sort of drawn into his orbit. So maybe there are some similarities, but as I say, I was more aware of how different they are, but that they're drawn together through because of this great artistry that Laszlo exhibits.
It is no coincidence that fate brought us together on the eve of my mother's death. I'm good at reading the signs.
Sir, I do not know what the commission entails.
We'll talk about the details at home, but you'll be well compensated. And also, you'll be given a place here on the property to live and work. I think that residing here will allow you the time and the space to conceive of it properly. And your family, should they arrive, they're welcome here too. What do you say?
I would like to draw something and present it to you.
You'd like to win the commission. All right, you can do that. It's cold. Let's return inside. Come on.
Felicity, this story is about the echoes of violence that can reverberate through people for their entire lives. How did you go about finding and expressing the pain that Ezrabet carries within herself?
Well, that's a huge, huge element of who she is when we meet her. And you see that in the difference, in a subtle way, in the difference between that photograph of them on their wedding day that's held for the interval, and you see the time before they've been through this immense trauma of being in the camps. And then when you meet her, you see physically what has happened. And because of that experience, she's suffering from malnutrition, and you see the toll it has taken on her. But mentally, you see someone who is absolutely Jedi-like, who's just totally focused and has an absolute capacity for truthfulness and for bringing that truth out when it's needed towards the end of the film.
And she only appears halfway through, but she's a force really throughout the film. How did that late appearance in the film inform your performance, Felicity? Because the moment when they meet is so charged.
I mean, it's that you as the audience member are put into that same position that they are as protagonists, that they haven't seen each other for 8 years. So you have a sense of that time by not meeting her until the second half. You are therefore put in a place of great empathy for them in that moment when they're united, and you are really waiting for it and desperate to kind of find out who this person is, having heard her throughout the first half of the film through the letters.
Ezrabet, pardon me, am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's fine. Just fine. Feel free to call me Elizabeth if you prefer it.
And your English is impressive.
Thank you. I attended university in England.
Oh, where?
Oxford, to study English. And I returned home for communications.
And did you do anything with that?
Yes, I wrote for a popular national paper at home.
What's your name, Zed?
A journalist.
Consul?
Foreign affairs.
Well, perhaps you can help your husband sound less like he shines shoes for a wage.
Haven't you told them anything about me?
Laszlo, how long have you been here now? 4, 5 years? You have no excuse anymore. I'm sorry, I got a little carried away there. Will you please pass that back?
Finally, to both of you, what was it like to be part of this film? Because it really is such an unusual film for this time in cinematic history. I mean, the scope of the storytelling here, it's so rare, and it really harks back to another era.
Well, I'm from that era, so it so it actually felt like just normal work to me.
But the fact that it has an intermission, that it's so long, that you're following these characters over such a huge period of time in their lives.
Yeah, no, it's really lovely because there is a great sense of nostalgia, and I think Brady has a very particular style that is slow and lovely and drawn out, where you really get to explore these characters, and that doesn't happen often in films these days.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the film ironically feel so contemporary, is the fact that it's drawing on these, you know, quite traditional facets of cinema by having that intermission, by telling a story in a grandiose, epic way. And it's almost become so new and bold because everything now is the emphasis is short form content. Having something so deliciously long is so fresh.
Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones, thank you so much for talking to Arena.
Thank you very much.
Music there from Daniel Bloomberg's original score for the film The Brutalist. Before that, you heard Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones speaking to Sinead Egan about The Brutalist. The film opens in Irish cinemas on Friday. We'll be reviewing it on tomorrow night's Arena, and we'll be finding out if or not it gets the Oscar nominations that are expected. And no doubt Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones will not be the only ones watching the announcement of the Oscars with interest tomorrow at lunchtime. Both are tipped for nods in the supporting actor and actress categories. Yeah. 24-Hour Plays Dublin is back at the Abbey Theatre for its 12th annual presentation, and all of it to raise funds for Dublin Youth Theatre. This is a unique celebration of creativity and community. It brings together an extraordinary array of talent from across Irish theatre for 24 hours, just one day, culminating with a showcase of original short plays hosted by the Abbey Theatre. Six plays will be performed in the Abbey Theatre for one night only on this Sunday, the 26th of January. And to find out more about them, I'm joined right now by just three of the dozens of people that will be taking part in the event this year. A very big welcome to Aisling O'Mara, Katrina Daly and Brian Burrows. Even as I read that, I'm just going to come to you on it, Aisling. Even as I read six plays, 24 hours, you know nothing about, you don't know who your character is going to be. You haven't got a script. You're going in absolutely blind and you have no notion what's going to be thrown at you on Sunday morning after the writers have been working on the scripts all night.
Yeah.
How frightening.
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying. But isn't that why we do this job anyway? Like, we're all lunatics anyway, aren't we?
And this is not is not your first rodeo with the 24-hour plays.
No, it's not. I've acted before. Actually, Katrina wrote it.
Yeah.
The Wall?
No, it was Get Out.
Get Out, Get Out, Get Out, Get Out. I will now. And Brian was also in it. And then in 2023, I wrote one.
Right.
So now I'm back for Badness.
So, and you're performing
I'm going to act
this time
round.
Which is, well, we'll come back to you on which is more frightening because we better talk to the others as well. Brian Burrows, how many roles have you, roles, I don't mean how many roles have you played.
Sure.
How many kind of different functions within the 24 hours plays have you performed or been part of?
Well, they've been very nice to me. So I would say that I've acted in three of them and they've always had me around as kind of movement director in case someone decides they need a big sword fight in one of the plays.
Because one of the things the actors have to say, I have never done X on stage before.
Yes.
Which is... Don't tell a director something you've never done or something you can do, because you will be doing both of them before the end.
100%. You've got the canny ones who say things like, I've never been mute before, in the hope that they don't get any lines. So my particular favourite that I was so pleased I got to do was, I'd never flipped a table over in a rage in a play before. It seemed like a really good thing to do. So they arranged for me to do that. It was wonderful. I got to play Panty, which was fantastic. They dressed me up as Panty. I got to do Panty's Noble Call, and at the end they gave me a table to flip over. I was delighted, in high heels, I must add.
Perfect.
So, and the role this year, you're a director, so you're just going to inflict pain on others.
Inflict pain on others. I'm going to direct. My job really is to serve the writer. The writers are fantastic. I don't know how they manage to pool together all of the like elements of what everyone has suggested and done. So in one case, there was a year Peter Daly said, I can do this. And he was able to arc his shoulder blade a particular way. So the writer found a way to incorporate that naturally into the play. So I think a lot of it is serving the writer first and foremost, so that what they've written really ends up on the stage. The other is talking the actors down from the inevitable panic attack, which won't happen all at the same time, but you have to check the lavatories a lot to go, who's in there now? Are you all right? Come on out, you'll be fine. Well,
they're only going to panic for 23 of the 24 hours because they'll be on stage for part of the evening.
Exactly, so it'll be grand.
It'll be grand when they finally get there. And then you, Katrina, you're writing this time. Have you written before or did you perform?
Oh, no, I'm very much just a writer. Thank you very much.
That shows she's very good.
She's a phenomenal writer.
I can't be volunteering for anything else.
Yeah.
So.
But it strikes me, you know, the writing process is often one where, in fact, you sit down, you get all this, may I say it politely, rubbish down on the page, which then you go back and look and say, there's one sentence I can use in my play. When I write another 475 pages of rubbish, I might have something.
Absolutely.
So this is high speed stuff involving pizza and caffeine, I believe, are two
it's
of the essential tools.
The only way you get through it is the pizza delivery at midnight. And
so what time do you get? What's the process for you as the writer? Because the script has to be there for the actors to rehearse.
Absolutely. So we'll all meet at 8 on Saturday, and the actors will kind of pitch themselves, I suppose, for want of a better word. They'll show that they all have to bring a prop with them and show a special skill and say something that they've never done on stage that they'd like to do. So from that, we then go with our directors, pick our casts, and then I use kind of everything that they've said in their pitches to create something. I'm not sure I'd call it a play. Yes, it is a play, but it's good fun.
Is it set in stone? It's 5 characters in every play. That's the way it
is. 5 performers. And now you never know, you could have 2 people playing the same part.
Yes.
So, you know, can mix things up a bit. I won't say there's 5 characters in every play, you know.
Meta. Performers in every play. See, there's the writer's mind.
There we go.
Already at work. You may not be allowed to divulge such matters at this early point in time, Ashley. Have you chosen your prop?
No.
Is that very good acting now?
No, I haven't.
Do you know your special skill?
Everyone's business. I just know everyone's business.
She's not wrong.
There you go.
That's your special skill.
That's why my hair used to be so big.
And what have you never done on stage before?
Oh, no, you're ruining it.
I know. Okay. No, you don't have to tell me because I don't want to ruin it.
I'm dying to know.
I'm dying to know too. Is that
does that spoil it? Because then somebody has a head start thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to write about that. So maybe you.
No, I'd be more afraid they'd rob my idea. That's what I'd be afraid of.
Fair. Yeah. Oh, well, the other actor said
before you're
gets
always
to you,
counting who's before you. Who's after.
Actually, no, Mara, if they go in alphabetical order by first name, you're fine. If they go in alphabetical order by second name, somebody else will have chosen. So I will not force you on that. This is all part of supporting Dublin Youth Theatre. That is essentially what is at heart here. And it was you, Katrina, really. I think your kind of route into theatre was through Dublin Youth Theatre,
well,
was it?
I'm not sure I'd quite say that. I kind of finished college in 2012. You know, a great time to graduate from university. Ireland was very much in the recession, so I went to a Dublin Youth Theatre show. I think it was part of Fringe or Dublin Theatre Festival. I can't remember. But I got talking to Ella Daly, who would have been kind of the manager of DYT at the time.
Yeah.
So I just got talking to her and she was like, well, look, I can organise a job bridge for you here. So I interned there for about 6-7 months. So I would have been there every Saturday morning when the guys would come in, and I was involved in some of the fundraising. And
what did you see happening there that you think, you know, some of the names that have come out of there, I'm thinking of Emmett Kerwin, for example, has come through that system. Aidan Gillen has come through that system. You know, there are others there as well. What did you see happening there that you kind of thought, wow, this is a great model of how to make theatre work?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just lovely to see at the beginning of the of the term of new people coming in. They'd kind of be there on the first day, all kind of shy and whatever. And then within kind of 3 or 4 weeks, it's like they were all family. But I think this kind of learning that DYT brings to people is, I think it gives you a full appreciation of every aspect of theatre. A lot of drama classes can just solely focus on acting, but I think with the different kind of workshops that they give the groups, they kind of leave, not like if they needed to rig a light, they could rig a light. If they needed to perform, they can perform. But yeah, it's full.
And I guess you have had that in your own life and career, Brian, that kind of multidisciplinary side of things. The fact that you have been a movement director, the fact that you're directing here, and the fact that you've also work as a performer. You've seen it from every side. It's kind of essential to theater,
it's extraordinary.
Isn't it?
I'm noticing it more and more. And say in Aisling's case, I know Aisling foremost as a writer, or sorry, as an actor, I should say, but is also a fantastic writer. And we were talking about how just having a foot in all the different skill sets gives you massive appreciation for when you are wearing one of the other hats. You sympathise with your director as an actor going, they just want me to make a choice, just decide and do something so their job's a bit easier. But coming back to what Katrina was saying about the youth theatres, the fact that they get to be involved and take part in the 24-hour plays is a great way for them to see professionals at work, even in a heightened, panicked state. They see what the professional standard is, which is fantastic.
Before we finish up, Ashton, I have to ask you about Blue Moon, starring Ethan Hawke, Margaret Qualley, Andrew Scott, and Ashleen O'Mara. What is the film, and how extraordinary was it to be in company like that?
It was amazing. I ended up being on it for about 3 weeks, and they filmed it in 3 weeks, which was kind of amazing. It's a smaller role, but she's in it all the time.
Well, it's all about the visuals, and you know, you may not.
Well, this is it, and I do look great.
The camera's on you.
But like, they're just the nicest people to work with. They were so professional. And Richard Linklater is probably the kindest person.
He's the director, yeah.
He's the director, and he's really brilliant, smart guy. And then Ethan Hawke is really, really kind. It is a really niche film. It's about the opening of Oklahoma, the musical. And it would have been Rodgers and Hammerstein who wrote it.
Yeah.
But it's actually about Ethan's characters, whose heart. And
he's Lorenz Hart, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's about his
Anderson,
fault.
Did you have much dealing with Andrew Scott? Was Andrew on?
Yeah, I had a few chats with Andrew.
Can you tell us what Andrew's playing in it? Or?
Yeah, he is playing Rogers.
One of Rogers and Hammerstein.
He's playing Rogers.
He's playing Rogers, okay.
Saw my little heart drop there.
lots of puns to be made on that one, but there you go, in terms of heart dropping, etc. But nevertheless... Listen, the best of luck with it all.
Thank you kindly.
I do not envy you your task of enjoy the, make sure they get you the pizza you want.
Oh, absolutely. Katrina,
that'll be essential to it. Which is more difficult, acting or the writing part for 24 hours?
Acting.
No.
Brian? Acting. 100%.
Acting.
Writing,
of course, Katrina said in a totally unbiased fashion. That's Aisling O'Mara, Katrina Daly and Brian Burrows, who will be taking part in the 24-hour plays at the Abbey Theatre on Sunday the 26th of January. It's all to raise funds for Dublin Youth Theatre. Full details on abbeytheatre.ie. And for more information about Dublin Youth Theatre, if you have somebody interested in that line of things, dublinyouththeatre.com. And I'm coming, finishing up a little bit earlier tonight, because news has come to us while we were on air that the Irish veteran sax player and singer Paddy Cole has died at the age of 85. He celebrated his 85th birthday, in fact, on the 17th of December. One of the absolute leaders of the Irish show business and the show band era for the last 70 years, just 15 when he joined a band. Of course, he's a native of Castleblaney in my own county of Monaghan, but he lived in Dublin for a lot of his life, and he is survived by his wife Helen and their three children, Pierce, Pat and Karen. You love Jay Goreva, Anna Mulish, and lots of people will be very sad about to hear that news this evening. And no doubt John Creedon, I'm sure, will be giving you lots of Paddy Cole. But before I finish up this evening, let me tell you that this evening's programme was researched by Leah Murphy. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator, and the programme was produced by Reg Luby. But I'm going to leave not the last words, but certainly the last notes to Paddy Cole, who was, as this song lets us know, without any doubt, the king of the swingers.